Chapter 2
Gleaming shell of an outworn lie, fable of right divine, you gained your crowns by heritage, but blood was the price of mine. The throne I won by blood and sweat, by crom I will not sell, for promise of valleys filled with gold, threat of the halls of hell. The Road of Kings. In the citadel, in a chamber with a domed ceiling of carven jet and the fretted arches of doorways glimmering with strange dark jewels, a strange conclave came to pass. Conan of Aquilonia, blood from unbandaged wounds caking his huge limbs, faced his captors. On either side of him stood a dozen black giants, grasping their long-shafted axes. In front of him stood Sotha, and on divans lounged Strabonus and Amalrus in their silks and gold, gleaming with jewels, naked slave boys beside them pouring wine into cups carved of a single sapphire. In strong contrast stood Conan, grim, blood-stained, naked but for a loincloth, shackles on his mighty limbs, his blue eyes blazing beneath the tangled black mane which fell over his low, broad forehead. He dominated the scene, turning to tinsel the pomp of the conquerors by the sheer vitality of his elemental personality, and the kings in their pride and splendor were aware of it, each in his secret heart, and were not at ease. Only Tsotha was not disturbed.
"Our desires are quickly spoken, King of Aquilonia," said Tsotha. "It is our wish to extend our empire."
"And so you want to seize my kingdom?" rasped Conan.
"What are you but an adventurer, seizing a crown to which you had no more claim than any other wandering barbarian?" parried Amalrus. "We are prepared to offer you suitable compensation."
"Compensation?"
It was a gust of deep laughter from Conan's mighty chest.
"The price of infamy and treachery. I am a barbarian, so I shall sell my kingdom and its people for life and your filthy gold? Ah, how did you come to your crown, you and that black-faced pig beside you? Your fathers did the fighting and the suffering and handed their crowns to you on golden platters. What you inherited without lifting a finger, except to poison a few brothers, I fought for. You sit on satin and guzzle wine the people sweat for and talk of divine rights of sovereignty. Ha! I climbed out of the abyss of naked barbarism to the throne, and in that climb I spilt my blood as freely as I spilt that of others. If either of us has the right to rule men, by crom, it is I. How have you proved yourselves my superiors? I found Aquilonia in the grip of a pig like you, one who traced his genealogy for 1,000 years. The land was torn with the wars of the barons, and the people cried out under oppression and taxation. Today no Aquilonian noble dares maltreat the humblest of my subjects, and the taxes of the people are lighter than anywhere else in the world. What of you? Your brother Amalrus holds the eastern half of your kingdom and defies you. And you, Strabonus, your soldiers are even now besieging castles of 12 or more rebellious barons. The people of both your kingdoms are crushed into the earth by tyrannous taxes and levies, and you would loot mine? Ha! Free my hands, and I'll varnish this floor with your brains."
Tsotha grinned bleakly to see the rage of his kingly companions.
"All this, truthful though it might be, is beside the point. Our plans are no concern of yours. Your responsibility is at an end when you sign this parchment, which is an abdication in favor of Prince Arpello of Pelia. We will give you arms and a horse and 5,000 gold lunas and escort you to the eastern frontier."
"Setting me adrift where I was when I rode into Aquilonia to take service in her armies, except with the added burden of a traitor's name?"
Conan's laugh was the deep, short bark of a timber wolf.
"Arpello, eh? I've had suspicions of that butcher of Pelia. Can you not even steal and pillage frankly and honestly, but you must have an excuse, however thin? Arpello claims a trace of royal blood, so you use him as an excuse for theft and a satrap to rule through. I'll see you in hell first."
"You're a fool," exclaimed Amalrus. "You are in our hands, and we can take both your crown and life at our pleasure."
Conan's answer was neither kingly nor dignified, but characteristically instinctive in the man, whose barbaric nature had never been submerged in his adopted culture. He spat full in Amalrus's eyes. The king of Ophir leaped up with a scream of outraged fury, groping for his slender sword. Drawing it, he rushed at the Cimmerian, but Tsotha intervened.
"Wait, your majesty. This man is my prisoner."
"Aside, wizard!"
shrieked Amalrus, maddened by the glare in the Cimmerian's blue eyes.
"Back, I say!"
roared Tsotha, roused to awesome wrath. His lean hand came from his wide sleeve and cast a shower of dust into the Ophirian's contorted face. Amelris cried out and staggered back, clutching at his eyes, the sword falling from his hand. He dropped limply on the divan, while the Kothian guards looked on stolidly, and King Strabonius hurriedly gulped another goblet of wine, holding it with hands that trembled. Amelris lowered his hands and shook his head violently, intelligence slowly sifting back into his gray eyes.
"I went blind," he growled. "What did you do to me, wizard?" "Merely a gesture to convince you who was the real master."
The mask of his formal pretense dropped, revealing the naked evil personality of the man.
"Strabonus has learned his lesson. Let you learn yours. It was but a dust I found in a Stygian tomb which I flung into your eyes. If I brush out their sight again, I will leave you to grope in darkness for the rest of your life."
Amelris shrugged his shoulders, smiled whimsically, and reached for a goblet, dissembling his fear and fury. A polished diplomat, he was quick to regain his poise. Tsotha turned to Conan, who had stood imperturbably during the episode. At the wizard's gesture, the blacks laid hold of their prisoner and marched him behind Tsotha, who led the way out of the chamber, through an arched doorway, into a winding corridor whose floor was of many-hued mosaics, whose walls were inlaid with gold tissue and silver chasing, and from whose fretted arched ceiling swung golden censers filling the corridor with dreamy perfumed clouds. They turned down a smaller corridor, done in jet and black jade, gloomy and awful, which ended at a brass door, over whose arch a human skull grinned horrifically. At this door stood a fat, repellent figure, dangling a bunch of keys. Tsotha's chief eunuch, Shukeli, of whom grisly tales were whispered. A man with whom a bestial lust for torture took the place of normal human passions. The brass door led into a narrow stair that seemed to wind down into the very bowels of the hill on which the citadel stood. Down these stairs went the band, to halt at last at an iron door, the strength of which seemed unnecessary. Evidently it did not open on outer air, yet it was built as if to withstand the battering of mangonels and rams. Shukeli opened it, and as he swung back the ponderous portal, Conan noted the evident uneasiness among the black giants who guarded him. Nor did Shukeli seem altogether devoid of nervousness as he peered into the darkness beyond. Inside the great door there was a second barrier, composed of heavy steel bars. It was fastened by an ingenious bolt which had no lock and could be worked only from the outside. This bolt shot back, the grill slid into the wall. They passed through into a broad corridor, the floors, walls, and arched ceiling of which seemed to be cut out of solid stone. Conan knew he was far underground, even below the hill itself. The darkness pressed in on the guardsmen's torches like a sentient, animate thing. They made the king fast to a ring in the stone wall. Above his head in a niche in the wall, they placed a torch so that he stood in a dim semicircle of light. The blacks were anxious to be gone. They muttered among themselves and cast fearful glances at the darkness. Tsotha motioned them out, and they filed through the door in stumbling haste, as if fearing that the darkness might take tangible form and spring upon their backs. Tsotha turned toward Conan, and the king noticed uneasily that the wizard's eyes shone in the semi-darkness and that his teeth much resembled the fangs of a wolf gleaming whitely in the shadows.
"And so farewell, barbarian," mocked the sorcerer. "I must ride to Shamar in the siege. In 10 days I will be in your palace in Tamar with my warriors. What word from you shall I say to your women before I flay their dainty skins for scrolls whereon to chronicle the triumphs of Tsothalanti?"
Conan answered with a searing Sumerian curse that would have burst the eardrums of an ordinary man, and Tsotha laughed thinly and withdrew. Conan had a glimpse of his vulture-like figure through the thick-set bars as he slid home the grate. Then the heavy outer door clanged, and silence fell like a pall.